Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Uncovered podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. Got some people in the comments. Matthew Kimber, relative of yours, Jared?
Probably. Brother.
Vignesh Ram, Abdul Tia, Sheratan KD, Arko, and Aditya Manija are here with us as well. And the premise of this particular Uncovered podcast is the chaotic world of Pakistan cricket. And Jared,
Should be just 10 minutes then.
This is a long, long list. Like, so much has happened. But I want to start with the moment when Pakistan lost that first test to England in Multan. That's kind of where all of the recent chaos started from. And, you know, Chairman Mohsin Naqvi, he rejigged the selection committee, right? Asad Shafiq and Hasan Cheema retained their spots. Mohammad Yusuf had resigned. And in came former elite panel umpire, Aleem Dar, and Azhar Ali, former Pakistan captain, and Aqib Javed, World Cup winner in 92. And a change of selectors mid-series is definitely not what you expect from a professional setup, is it?
Or from an amateur one.
Yeah, it was insane, right? And the first decision that this selection committee took was to drop Babar Azam, Shaheen Shah Afridi, and Naseem Shah from the remainder of the test series, the England one. And in hindsight, look, Pakistan came back in dramatic fashion to win the test series 2-1. And Babar's replacement even scored a ton on the reuse surface in Multan. And this is now being hailed as some sort of genius and brave masterstroke. However, Jared, dropping...
Whoa, boy. By who? Yeah.
By a lot of people in Pakistan, and we'll get to that. But dropping three of your main stars mid-series, I emphasize on mid-series, even if they are or were underperforming, definitely creates a lot of chaos and potential anarchy, in addition to breeding insecurity amongst your cricketers.
Ah, it's a terrible idea. I'm shocked that anyone thinks... They won because they played on reused surfaces and they went with a few extra spinners. Like, I'm happy that that worked for them. I still think if they lost a toss in the second test, they would have got absolutely smashed in the face and it wouldn't have mattered. But they won because of that, which, you know, whoever came up with that idea, it worked. It will only work once. It's, you know, you can only play that trick on a single occasion. Fine. Babar Azam could have made runs in this next test. Do you remember what I said about the replacement? I said the replacement will probably make 100 and then fail afterwards. And he's exactly done that, the poor bastard. So now he'll be under pressure. So now we can, if you drop him midway through a series, you'll be fine as well. It's just nonsense. It's not how professional cricket teams are run. And anyone who thinks that Pakistan is onto the right thing based on the last couple of weeks shouldn't be involved with Pakistan cricket.
Yeah. Gotta drop them all. Aqib ball. That's the phrase that I've come up with. But you know, okay, fine. Babar Azam hadn't scored a test match 50 in 18 innings. Shaheen Shah Afridi, we all acknowledge, is not the same bowler that we saw maybe, you know, 2 years ago. Yep. Talk to me about Naseem Shah, right? Like, he did all right. He was drawing a lot of false shots. We are told that he had a niggle, but then why not retain him for the third test match? I mean, something was definitely up over there.
We're told that he had a niggle and then we never saw him again. look, it's not about that. It's about, if you're going to drop those three players mid-series, there's a protocol. There's
exactly.
A system. There's professionalism. With Baba, remember, he was dropped and then we were told he was arrested. Do you remember that?
Yep.
It's like, if you're going to do it, the first thing you do is say, okay, we've decided to arrest Babar Azam. This is not dropped because obviously he's Babar Azam and you don't drop a player of his talent. But we're going to move over for a moment and we're going to try someone else. We're going to give him a second just to get himself back into where he needs to be, right? Absolutely an acceptable thing. I probably wouldn't have done it in the middle of a series. I probably would have done it at the start of the series, but
yep.
I can understand why they played the Hail Mary card of picking him. We're now weeks after hearing Naseem Shah might have had a niggle, right? I reckon India and Pakistan are the worst at this, of a player goes out of the team and no one says anything. Right. And then the minute everyone starts to moan, it's like, no, he was injured. Why didn't you just tell us at the time? We would have all accepted that. If he was injured, he's injured. Right. But we're okay with that. It's just an unnecessary way of doing things again and causing issues.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that with the formation of this new selection committee, right, the selection powers for both the squad and playing 11 were taken away from the coach and captain. I was in the presser, Jared, the Jason Gillespie presser, where he informed the media that he is now simply a match day strategist. And Gary Kirsten chose to resign, right, as a direct consequence. So you can't really blame Gary over here, can you?
No, I mean, these guys... I mean, at a certain point, I think if you're taking the Pakistani, you know that I've talked to people within Pakistan about potentially working at times. I know if I'm taking any job there, what I'm doing, right? Like,
yeah.
And pretty much from Jeff Lawson onwards, yeah, we all know what the situation was. Jeff Lawson was pretty vocal about what went on when he was there.
Yep.
Every coach since has been more or less the same. They haven't always been vocal. You know, Mickey Arthur refused to quit his other job. I mean, how much more do you need to know about how badly that organization is run? So even if they promise you something, it's probably not going to come to fruition anyway. Well done to Gary Kirsten for just being like, no, you signed me on this job. You're now not getting me to do this job. I'm out.
Yeah.
Jason Gillespie's probably thinking to himself, well, I don't know. I gave up the Adelaide job and now I'm kind of in limbo for a little while. Let me ride this out and see if I can make it work. Jason Gillespie probably... a slightly different person to Kirsten as well. I think Jason Gillespie may be the sort of person who thinks to himself, well, you know, I can work with this. I can work with anything. I can make this work. And he might be wrong, but I think he's probably more that kind of personality in general. But yeah, it's, I mean, you sign these guys, you pay them an exorbitant amount of money, you make a big deal out of it, and then straight away you cut off their balls, right? And you say, no, you can't do that job anymore. It's done. It's finished.
And Gillespie, I mean, is probably lured in because he's now the interim all-format match day strategist for a bit, right? The Australia and Zimbabwe tours as well. And they're probably giving him some extra quid, which he probably doesn't mind. But both of those guys, Gary Kirsten and Dizzy, they didn't sign up for this job. I mean, Gary, just to put things into context, spent a few weeks in Faisalabad observing all the white ball talent pool that Pakistan had in the Champions Cup, right? And then he was told that he doesn't have any selection power. So, hey, come here for player development and scouting and bam, you don't have a say. Like, the story goes, basically, and this is what I've been told, is that he was supposed to serve Pakistan for 11 months in a year as white ball head coach. But upon having his powers reduced, he wanted to just turn up for specific series and not work all the time since he was only a matchday strategist. I mean, that checks out, at least for me.
Yeah, they changed the job on him. So he went, okay, well, if you're changing the job, I'm not going to do as much of it, is my guess. I mean, we have no idea if that, how much of that is true and how all these things work. Although with Gary Kirsten, it seems like most of the things that have been rumored of recent times have ended up being true. So perhaps someone close to him is doing the leaking. But yes, look, when it comes down to it, if you hire someone for a job and then you say, this is what we want you to do, and then about a couple of months in, you say, no, actually, we're renegotiating. Well, he gets to renegotiate too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like at that point, you signed him for this job. That job no longer is available. And he's like, fine, okay, understand. Now I'm going to do this.
And did you see that tweet of Gary Kirsten from back in the day that people were retweeting where he has like basically quoted Steve Jobs that we hire smart people so that they can tell us what to do? Well, that's not the case in the PCB at all. And I mean, good on you, Gary. You know, you didn't need this. And the irony over here is that he was brought in to coach Pakistan in the T20 World Cup, which they got knocked out of in the first round, and the Champions Trophy. The white ball coach never got to coach Pakistan in a single ODI. Right? Now that is very, very on brand with the PCB.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think when it comes down to it, there is, if you've hired a coach who has a track record and you believe in him, his first tournament, he basically gets no time to prepare. And then before he's done anything, you change literally the way he's going to do the job. It just shows you that you have no idea as an organization how to run a cricket team.
Yes.
And that's where they are. And there's none of us that don't believe that.
And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Dizzy also parts ways in a couple of months over here. I mean, I know he's taken over as all-format matchday strategist for the limited overs tours of Australia and Zimbabwe. Mm. But, you know, the PCB have already started their hunt for a new white ball coach, which I reckon will be a very, very tough sell given the Kirsten fiasco, right? I mean, who would want, what top coach would want a job where there is so much volatility and political interference?
Look, I've talked to many people who've been offered jobs for Sri Lanka and Pakistan, and the word's out. Like, there's the sort of people that they get are the, I forget his name, but that guy from the West, the coach in the West Indies, who would, I think he was a South African, who would, he would apply for every job. Is it Richard Pybus? I think that
it
was
is Richard Pybus.
He's the sort of guy that applies for those jobs, right? Mm. No one else, like, the other people are like waiting to see what happened. And like, what's Shane Watson suddenly thinking?
Hmm. He's probably thinking he dodged a bullet.
He definitely dodged a bullet, right?
Also, remember how Shane Watson asked for a certain amount of money and they offered him quadruple that amount, but because there were so many leaks, he was like, nah, not for me.
Exactly. I mean, why would you accept that position at the moment? So, you know, you get the sort of Richard Pybus guys who, I'm not saying that there aren't talented people on that level, but the sort of serial guys who apply for every single position. I don't know really how you translate what is happening. Like, there's always a chance of a Jonathan Trott-like situation.
Yeah.
Even Chris Silverwood. You'd have to say that Chris Silverwood rehabilitated his career, right, with Sri Lanka. Yeah. Right?
He did.
But at the same time, he still left early.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so anyone taking that job now is probably got one eye on a franchise job or a county job. Right? So you take it. So maybe you get a couple of wins, or you get your name in the press a little bit, or you show some, you know, you do some good things, and then you apply for, I don't know, I was going to say Derby. Derby's probably not the right one to be mentioning now. But you apply for Leicester's job, or you apply for Notts' job, or whichever job comes available, and you're more of a chance of getting it. Or you get some franchise gigs off the back of it, right?
Yeah.
It's not a job that anyone takes at the moment. No good experienced coach is going to take it. No big name person is going to take it.
Yep.
And that will last a little while, and then people will forget again. And then someone like Gary Kirsten or Jason Gillespie. I mean, look, in all honesty, I'm kind of shocked they did it in the first place.
Yep.
But there's a lot of zeros on the end of some of these checks.
They are, definitely. I mean, it is a lucrative position and they market it well at the time, but then they go on and create so much drama that these coaches are left thinking or questioning their life choices. Look, I have spent a few or attended a few press conferences now with Jason Gillespie. I don't know how closely you know him, but from what I gathered is that he was a really positive person who kept yearning for stability and continuity. And in the last presser that I attended, he was like, yeah, you know what, I'm just sticking to match day strategy, I can't answer anything else, and he's just like going with the flow at this point. I don't think that we'll see him in this job let's say in February.
I mean, we're in October, so we're about to be in November.
Hmm.
I mean, the over or under and him making it to Christmas is, I back the unders. I don't know if there's a bookie that has odds on that. They probably won't, but I'd have unders on it. No, I don't know Dizzy particularly well, but we have a lot of friends in common, and obviously, you know, been following him very closely as a cricketer for years. I can't see why he would think this is worth the hassle.
Yep.
And he probably did think it was at the time. He's like, he would have looked at the job spec. He would have thought to himself, okay, South Australia, Adelaide Strikers, maybe not doing as well as possible. I might need to find a new job anyway. This is a good position, gets me back. You know, Jason Gillespie is an interesting one because a couple of years ago, he was seen as the next Australian coach. It never quite happened. He's never picked up a major coaching thing. If I'm Jason Gillespie at the moment, I'm thinking to myself, is this the best time to quit? Like, I just beat England when no one thought I could. And now I can apply for a bunch of other jobs. But if he makes it to Christmas, that is spectacular news. But I can see why he might want to hang around for a little while. But eventually, I just think it's frustrating. I know what it is like to work for franchises and owners when they're idiots. When they make bad decisions, when they sabotage everything that you're trying to do, when you know what the right thing is to do, and they even sometimes know what the right thing is to do, and they consciously choose another option. I know what it is like to do that. And I've done it for 4 weeks and bang my head against the wall. I could only imagine what it would be like for 7 or 8 months of the year to do that. And if they keep paying him on time, I'm hoping and assuming they're paying him on time. But if they keep paying him on time, you know, he might stick around for a little while. But yeah, it's the same old shit.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, from all these presses, I've gathered that he's really attached to the players. But to quote Dizzy himself from the last one that I attended, that he basically said that he's got splinters on his ass from sitting on the fence. So he didn't particularly hold back now, did he? And I mean, look,
we saw Sean Tate in a similar situation. And, you know, their mates going back a long way. No, I wouldn't say they're similar people, but similar backgrounds, obviously. You know, both South Australian boys. It's hard. And look at Darren Lehman. These are not people who generally don't say what they feel, right? Gillespie is born positive, I think, and looks for the brighter side a little bit. But do you remember how broken Sean Tate looked?
Yes. Right? I was there in that presser as well.
I remember Jeff Lawson. Jeff Lawson just looked broken as a man by that whole thing. And, you know, I spent a lot of time chatting to Mark Coles over the years as well, like the women's coach and, you know, and Mickey Arthur. Like, I've never... People love working with Pakistan cricket because they love the talent and they love the energy, but they hate working with the PCB and they hate working with the Pakistan political system, which are the two things you have to do. That is, everyone knows that, right?
And those two things go hand in hand, by the way. The politics is directly intertwined because the
patron-in-chief. And what I don't understand is, I just don't understand why at a certain point, if you really love Pakistan cricket, why no one has tried to run Pakistan cricket for the betterment of Pakistan cricket.
I swear to God. Right?
Like, I'm even by accident by now, they've had 83 chairmen. Surely one of them accidentally likes cricket enough to try and do the right thing for 5 minutes. And it
I mean, they always want to flex their muscle. And, you know, because the patron-in-chief is the acting prime minister and there's so many different prime ministers in the short period of time, everyone, a new chairman comes in and they start from scratch. So there is absolutely no continuity or stability whatsoever.
Yeah. No, it's just, terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, here's something that I want to pick your brain on, right? The new model for selection is so bizarre and absolutely unsustainable because, A, you've got five different guys now, right? Hasan Jima, Asad Shafiq, Azhar Ali, Aleem Dar, and what's-his-face? Aqib Javed, of course, how can I forget? So there's a case of too many selectors spoiling the broth here because what if there's a 3-2 split, right? You're asking for anarchy with this model.
It kind of depends on... Well done to Hasan Jima for keeping that gig, by the way. I don't know how he's still there. But it kind of just depends on what their roles are. So there is an element of there is certainly an element of, I think, if that was run correctly, perhaps what you would have is you'd have the four people underneath as scouts, analysts, former players, whatever their roles are, all feeding information back to one person, probably Aqib. Who's making the decisions. If that is done correctly, that's fine. In some ways, that is better than the committee system. And the problem with a lot of selection committees around the world is selection committees don't always like each other, right? Like, you know, I've been on selection committees. I know how this works. And it's like, oh, he's a you guy, Jared. I'm like, I don't know what that means. I'm just picking the player I think is best. And you're thinking I'm picking someone based on my personality. And so you get that sort of stuff. Whereas if you feed all the information into one active decision maker, that's fine. But that active decision maker has to be incredible, right?
Yep.
Because they have to be able to filter all that information, understand each thing, allow each person in the selection committee to win some wars and lose some battles and all that sort of stuff, which is all fine. And you can do something with it. You know, the idea, and also it comes down to, are you selecting the team or the squad? And I think that's a really interesting one going ahead with cricket, because if you look at the way that sort of Premier League football works and American sports work, is the general managers, the, you know, all those sorts of positions, what they kind of do is they decide on a coach and they're looking for a coach who is fits their strategy, right? Then they ask, then they say to the coach, okay, these are the sorts of players we're going to get you. And then the coach works out how to use them and how to put them on the field, right?
Yep.
Is this selection committee doing that? Like, is that still a part of the captain slash coach's decision?
No, here's your squad. It's not. They pick the squad and they pick the starting 11.
So here's my point. In modern sport, there is a reason why those two things are separated. Hmm. It's because captains and coaches have no idea what the next player off the rank is going to do unless they've actually played with them or coached them themselves. Mm-hmm. There's no way. Trevor Bayliss was so honest with this. He always used to say, do you think I'm watching counter games all the time? Like, I'm literally, my job is coaching the England cricket team. There is 9 counter games on today. Well, how am I supposed to watch all these games and watch all these innings? And even if I try and catch up with video, I can't catch up on everything. And the same with those selectors. If they're spending all their time watching all these National Cup, Champion Cup, Cup Cups that Pakistan has, right? If they're watching the Shaheens, and if they're watching the underage cricket, and they're watching domestic cricket, and they're watching people in franchise leagues, they're probably not spending as much time with the players directly themselves. So they can't give that information. It just goes back to how you're supposed to run it. And every time they have a chance of doing something correct, like having Hasan Cheema involved in it, and the more we mention his name, the more likely he is to get fired at this point. But, you know, they're putting themselves into good positions, and then they just, it's not that they shoot themselves in their foot, it's that they cut their foot off and then eat it.
Yeah, and it's not like, look, if this selection panel was just selecting the squad, I didn't have an issue with it. But the problem is that they have a direct say in what the playing 11 will be, and that also is an unsustainable model. I mean, just to give you some context, now they've, you know, singled out Asad Shafiq to tour with the team to Australia and Zimbabwe so that he can consult the captain and coach and select the playing 11. Like, what the fuck is happening here?
Well, so it's really interesting that I think Rob Key and George Bailey are two fascinating people involved in world cricket at the moment. Hmm. George Bailey has the role of chairman of selectors, but probably should be general manager, high performance manager, whatever title we use in cricket.
Similar for Aqib Javed. He's clearly Mohsin Naqvi, the chairman's right-hand man right now. He's not a selector. He is the Rob Key, right?
Yeah. And so you watch George Bailey. George Bailey clearly works very well with Andrew McDonald and Pat Cummins. Like, I say this from the outside, and obviously I'm more friends with George Bailey than I am with the other guys, but I watch this from the outside and I feel like it's working in a particular pattern from that, you know, Australia's won some stuff under those three guys, right? Like, it's a good team, despite the fact it's a bit of a flawed team at times. I think they've done really, really well. You know, World Test Championship and the ODI World Cup, like, bang, bang, take those, piss off home.
Yeah.
But you watch Bailey and he's throwing balls in the nets and he's very, very active and everything else. And Rob Key, compared to some of the other general managers, you know, that sort of more Andrew Strauss thing where Andrew Strauss was making sure that the trains are running on time. Rob Key is making sure that the right driver is in, right? Mm. And everything else. So there is an element of those jobs. The issue that I have and you have is, are they hiring the right person for that job or are they just putting random people in, right? Mm. Like, you know, that Asad Shafiq, I don't have much to do with. Hasan Cheema, I know a little bit. Aqib, obviously, just played a blinder by just saying, let's just make the wicket spin and see how we go. Mm-hmm. Azhar Ali, I was a huge fan of as a player. I'm not against the people, but you and I also know that they did this with Mohammad Hafeez and Wahab Riaz about 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Right, we've already been through this cycle. So what makes these people better or worse? We had Shoaib Malik on our podcast, right?
Yep.
He said a lot of good things, but he also did a lot of deflecting during that interview and didn't always answer the questions that we wanted him to answer. And so I'm not saying he's the right person. I'm not saying he's the wrong person. What I am saying is it's the same thing again. So a couple of weeks ago, it was him and who was it? Misbah and Yunus and whoever else were the mentors. So
now we've Malik, got Misbah, Saqlain, Waqar and Sarfaraz.
Yeah. So we had Hafeez and Wahab. Then we had these five mentors, and now we've got another selector and a selector plus in Asad Shafiq, right? Like, we're just rotating through random people at this point.
Yeah.
And it's like, you need to interview them. You need to understand what their vision is. You need to understand if that aligns with what you're trying to do. And if not, Asif Shafiq is not going to last in that position. Azhar Ali is not going to last in that position.
Selector Plus, by the way, is Aqib Javid, right? He's the guy who's kind of calling
all these shots. I would say he's probably... I'd say Selector Plus is probably what you would call the traveling person who is talking.
Okay, that's what you mean.
Yeah, I think Aqib is not even a selector. I think he's more the general... Yeah, the director or the general manager or whatever we want to call that role.
Yeah. So, funny story. It was apparently Aleem Dar's idea and decision to reuse the Multan pitch, but the man who is currently being hailed as Pakistan cricket's new messiah is Aqib Javed. It's like Aqib ball here, Aqib ball there. That's all you can read these days. And it's the same old story all over again, Jared. No system or processes in place, rash decisions, you know, drastic measures, and the everlasting messiah complex that has plagued not just Pakistan cricket, but this country as a whole.
You know, there's a... English cricket is, I think, has some of its issues from the sort of McCullum Stokes messiah complex, right?
Hmm.
But I do think that, so it's not exactly Pakistan only a thing here, but I do think at a certain point, if you just can't grow up, do you know what I mean? And just be like, it was us. We all got together and we had this conversation and someone came up with the idea, but then a bunch of us were like, actually that can work. Then someone else said, I know what we could do here and what we could do for the next test and whatever. That is what you need. An organization that does things great. And unfortunately, you can't do that. People just claim everything and then it's, you know, and what's going to happen when, I don't know, Australia go over and they do ragging pitches and Nathan Lyon takes 83 wickets, right? And and you lose. Is the same person's going to be thrown under the bus for being an idiot.
If they lost to Toss and Multan, they would have looked like idiots.
Yes, that as well. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the point of like, if you just start making correct decisions over and over again, I don't really care if you win this series against England. Because this series against England hasn't changed my opinion on anyone other than one of their spinners, right? Like, I mean, that's essentially all I've learned is, well, okay, now I believe they do have a world-class spinner and I'm quite happy with him. And let's see how he goes when he has to go outside of Pakistan on other wickets. Yeah. But I like the way he bowls. But it hasn't changed my opinion on anything else. And so it's still chaos, even if they won the series.
Yeah, I mean, almost feels accidental. And to quote Usman Samyuddin, he recently wrote a piece and he said that glory is temporary and toxicity is permanent over here. You, I think in your piece, there was this one phrase that you used that I really like. Yeah, you said that it's a performance act with arson, right? But... just be real with me for a second, Jared. Is the ideation of curating turning tracks versus Bazball, is that even something worthy of a lot of praise? I mean, credit to Aqib, sure, he rolled the dice and it worked. But like, wasn't that the obvious thing to do after all those flat decks?
I suppose I think if you go through it, and if I'd probably been thinking about it clearer, because I remember someone mentioning it to me even before the series, and I was like, look, their spinners haven't been very good, so I don't get the idea. But if you think back, they tried the green pitches versus Bangladesh, and that went to shit. They tried the flat pitches, and that went to shit. And so then they went to spinning. I suppose that's fine, isn't it? You cycle through until you find something that works. So all things considered, but there is an element, not of an element of luck, but in the toss, in that first test, there's certainly an element of that. It's also very possible that Jack Leach was bowling at his best and you give him a ragging wicket and he just takes a whole bunch of victims and you're in the shit anyway, right? Like all these things are completely possible with that kind of thing. I mean, we've seen, considering how much those pitches were spinning, we've seen Jack Leach be much better on wickets that haven't even spun as much as that before. So it could have gone wrong in many different ways. It's worked now, but the thing is, and I always used to have this same theory with Australia. Australia would turn up to these World Cups. They wouldn't do any planning. They wouldn't do any thought process. They would occasionally win one of them. And it was like, see, all that times you guys told us to get ready and to be smarter doesn't mean anything. And you're like, that's the issue. The issue isn't this other side. The issue is that we're trying to pretend that we just turn up to things. And when we're so much more talented than everyone else, we can make it work. And we'll just come up with a great theory. Whereas actually, if you want to be consistently good, as they've probably shown of recent times, now they plan their asses off, right? Like since they fluke won that T20 World Cup a little bit in 2021, they've actually been much better at planning all the way through and thinking their way through. And it's like Australian cricket is kind of been a little bit more consistent without that much of a better side, right?
Yes, and but you know what happens, Jared, when Australia win things? The team is hailed as, you know, the champions. Sure. But over here, Aqib Javed is being hailed as that messiah. And people think that everything that he'll touch is going to turn to gold. And he is the ultimate person to save Pakistan cricket. Look, what bothers me is that no one, or not a lot of people, are acknowledging the fact that Pakistan won this test series despite all the chaos. These cricketers, both men and women, weren't paid for 4 months or whatever. I don't know if they've still been paid, right? So why aren't they being hailed as heroes?
Yeah, exactly. And it someone coming up with the idea. I mean, wasn't it Cameron Ponsonby who first wrote the article?
Yes. Saying, if anything, Cameron Ponsonby came with the idea, right? Campbell. In jest?
Pondball. I think there's much better way of looking at these sorts of things than is being done. But this is, in truth, the problem with everything we're saying is there's millions of micro issues here.
Yeah. Also, it's Ponsonball. That's what makes sense. Anyway, Manan has a super chat over here. Says, chaos in Pakistan cricket gives us cricket lovers incredible highs and lows. Do you think this heightened chaos can lead to Pakistan winning a trophy and then not qualifying for the next edition? Pakistan always wins despite the chaos. It's not like the chaos enables them to win. This is a false narrative, right? There are flashes of brilliance because there is an immense talent pool in this country. But if you don't have that structure and professionalism and, you know, a system running, you won't get consistency. You will only get flashes of brilliance.
So this reminds me of, do you remember the theory in Australian cricket that you could only get any, they were only a good team when they sledged, right? Which is obviously the stupidest fucking theory of all time, right?
The Australian way, which had Steve Smith convinced, right?
Yeah, like you only win when you sledge, or actually we only win games and then we start when we're beating people, we sledge, which is actually what they meant. But they didn't understand that part of it, right? And it's like, actually, this Australian team's quite well liked at the moment and they don't sledge all that much and they won a World Test Championship and a World Cup in India, right? Like, where are all those people that said Australia needed to be harder than everyone else to win? Yeah. Hey, they can all those people have shut the fuck up, right?
They're now singing the song of woke captain Pat Cummins.
Do you remember Michael Clark during the 2022 World Cup came out and said, Australian team isn't hard enough. Not hard enough. They won a World Test Championship and a World Cup after that, right? It's nonsense. And it's the same JL. In Pakistan.
Why are you going with Michael Clark? JL tried to, you know, kind of mold that team in that manner and they wanted him out despite winning the T20 World Cup and the Ashes.
And so it's a similar thing with Pakistan. It's hiding behind the, we embrace the chaos. No, Pakistan's an incredibly talented cricket country. And they are very talented at a very specific skill most of the time, which is wicket taking. And wicket taking is such a disruptive form of cricket. And it's also probably not as consistent as making runs. Like your bowlers naturally go up and down a little bit more, whereas your six batters or seven batters, depending on your side, are a little bit more consistent. It's why in Test cricket specifically, batters give you consistency and bowlers win you matches. And then in limited overs cricket, it's why most teams stick with lots of batting to make sure that they can make enough runs and then hope they can defend it. And Pakistan plays a very different format of a game to that because of their strengths, right? It's not an accident. It's part of the way that they play.
It's the culture.
So, yeah. And so it's the pitches, probably, if we're being honest. It's probably, and you know, every country in the world is eventually inspired by their own wickets.
Yeah.
Or shaped by their own wickets, maybe the best way of putting it. So then you buy into that as a personality trait, right? And it's like, it's just bullshit. It's just, it really is bullshit. Pakistani bowlers are brilliant at coming up with theories and styles and, you know, new deliveries and all this sort of stuff because their wickets don't do much, right? Like in Australia, we have flatter wickets in Australia than Pakistan have, but as long as we've got a bloke who's 6'5", good luck hitting them off the square because they're always going to get that little bit of extra bounce and you're not going to be able to handle them, right? In Pakistan, being tall doesn't help. Bowling 95 miles an hour helps. Bowling reverse swing helps. Using a doosra helps. Coming up with a wobble ball helps, right? All of these different things have come out of Pakistan because there's no natural advantage for the bowlers there, right? Yeah. And so, you know, you look at all this sort of stuff and you're like, well, that makes a lot of sense. And so pretending that it's about personality and everything else, it's like, we know it's not. I can do analysis of almost every Pakistani victory ever and tell you what it was. It's probably new ball bowling. It's probably middle overs bowling that has dominated one of their World Cups or another, right? Over and over again. And sometimes you get Shahid Afridi in the 2008, 9, whatever, whenever that one was, or, you know, you get Inzamam in 1992, but they still need the other, they still need Umar Gul and Wasim Akram to do things with the ball at a time when no one else can get wickets. Who was it in the Hassan Ali in the Champions Trophy?
Champions Trophy.
Exactly the same thing against Bayram. It's the same thing over and over and over again.
And yeah, the PCB will come and claim all the credit whenever it's convenient. And that's the same sort of movie that we're seeing replayed right now. Anyway, that was just on the administration bit, you know, all the changes. There is a lot more to discuss in Pakistan cricket, but we will be taking a short break. And you're watching Uncovered with Jared and Bayram. Back with you in a moment.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com.
Welcome back to Uncovered. You guys are with Jared and Bayram. And in other news, Jared, the central contract list has been announced by the PCB. Here's some fun stuff from the list, right? Numan Ali has bagged a, I think, category C or D contract, can't quite remember. And there is a clause which says subject to fitness. Now, that one I can understand because man's like probably almost 50, right? But there's more. Shaheen Shah Afridi got demoted to Cat B and Babar Azam is still in category A. So again, you're, you know, trying to cause rifts or whatever, like potentially. But I can still see some sense in that because, well, whatever, Shaheen's regression has been quite bad.
Yeah.
Naseem Shah is category B, your all-format fast bowler who really should be category A. And here's the best one for you. Shaan Masood has a category B contract, good one, but the clause says subject to captaincy. So right after your captain has won you a test series in an incredible fashion, right? Coming back from 1-0 down when your team had conceded 823 runs versus England, you won both the test matches. He now has probably been made to feel very insecure that, hey, bud, you fail in the next series, you're done. You're going to get removed from the contract list as well.
Do you know what? I was thinking about this. I think it might have been a New Zealand or South Africa. Someone else had a contract list not that long ago. And I was thinking about this from a, we keep putting everyone in these A, B, C tiers or tier one, tier two, tier three, depending on the cricket board and everything else. But actually, when you think about it, fast bowlers should be in a different tier altogether.
Yep.
So,
especially all format. All format fast bowlers
should
be like...
I don't even think of them. I mean, you're right, but I don't think it even matters that much. So you look at Mark Wood or Pat Cummins or Jofra Archer, right? Hmm. Like, you just have to accept that they are eventually going to be fit. And how does it help your cricket if they slip out of contract? I remember when Sean Tate slipped out of contract and I wrote a piece about Cricket Australia's contracting and I was like, this is so silly. They told him he couldn't play in the IPL one year. He didn't play in the IPL. And then the next year he lost his contract. Whereas actually they knew they were going to use him again anyway. But they were telling him, oh, you know, go off and get fit. And it's like, well, how do you think he's going to get fit better? With the national resources or with the South Australian resources? I'm not having to go at first-class teams, but, you know, not even the Oval has a hyperbaric chamber. Do you know what I mean? Like, you, at a certain point, you need the full facilities to be able to get a fast bowler back. You want your doctor, not the regional doctor, to be looking after them, right?
Or not and Dr. Zaf from Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. Did I tell you I met Dr. Zaf recently?
Oh, anyway. No, you didn't.
Different. He used to work around the corner from here too. I just think that there's a different way of looking at fast bowlers, and we're kind of getting there mentally, but we're not getting there with contracts. So let's take the fast bowlers out of this a little bit, because I almost think they should be in their own category at the moment. Uh-huh. And that category should be, Shaheen, we know when you're fully fit, you're going to go straight back into category A. At the moment, we're going to keep you on a fast bowlers category and try and get you as fit as possible, and then we'll see how we go. And with Naseem, who knows if he's fully fit or not, or whatever the issue is with him. But again, if you take him out of all that, then you don't have to worry about whether he's A, B, or C. He's just in the fast bowlers category, and he's in, you know, he's on that list. And then secondly, as you said, if you're going to put something in like Shaan Masood is in subject to captaincy, remember when we asked Shoaib Malik, I had to ask this question to Shoaib Malik twice, which is, what is it like to be a professional when you're working in an amateur organization? and he didn't quite answer it either time.
Right? Yeah. He kept saying the word clarity. If you guys rewatch that, play a drinking game, right? Take a shot every time Shoaib Malik says the word clarity.
I'm not sure he understood it completely the first time I said it. The second time he did and didn't want to answer it, which is fine. I mean, look, everyone's got their reasons for answering things, and I get answered questions sometimes and I probably answer a different question because for the same, you know, for a similar kind of reason. But the point being is that this is what we're talking about. Like, if you're Sean Masood, who has done everything within his finances, his family's finances, his intellect, his work ethic, hiring coaches, talking to analysts, working with CricViz to become the best cricketer you are, and then you finally get to the point where it is like you steal a test series from nowhere that everyone thought they were going to lose, and the next day you get a contract and it says subject to captaincy. You're just like, well, what's the point? Like, what is the point of any of this? And I think that's the main issue.
Yeah, you play every test match like it's your last and you're literally breeding insecurity. How are you sending your test captain to South Africa saying that, hey, if you fuck up over here, we're going to make sure you're screwed?
Do you know what? There's this really interesting thing that I've noticed in American sports, and I think it's most American sports, where coaches won't coach, don't like coaching if that's the final year of their contract, right? So they will say, no, you're going to have to re-sign me for more years because I don't want to be a sitting duck coach. Yeah. I don't want to be in a situation where it doesn't really matter whether I do good or bad. You can get rid of me at the end of this year based on a whim. You have to make a decision now. And if you're not going to make that decision, then I'm going to make all my coaching decisions based on the fact that this is my last year and you're going to have to accept that. And I've been thinking about that a lot in cricket. We just don't do that sort of stuff in cricket at all.
Yeah.
Right? Like the amount of times we have a situation like that, and it's even worse if you think with coaches. It's like the amount of times a coach will be like, yeah, I'm coaching, but I'm only coaching to the end of this World Cup. And it's like, it's because no one has there's no re-signing of anyone, right? Mm-hmm. Who would be the longest tenured coach in the world at the moment?
In cricket? Think?
Yeah.
Gary right Stead? Now.
Would it be Gary Stead?
Probably Gary Stead.
What would he be? 7 years? 6 years? When did Mike Hessen leave?
It's been a while. Hessen leaved after 2019, wasn't it?
Yeah. What do you think most other professional sports?
Actually, never mind. I think there was Gary Stead in 2019. I can't remember.
Yeah, you might
be
right, actually.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Like, how long do you think professional coaches and other sports are hanging around? Like, well, I think there's an issue here. And yes. And I'm using coaches. Captaincy is exactly the same. And we understand captaincy is slightly different because you have dual form, you have your captaincy form and you have your cricket form and everything else. But you see, you get my point. My point is that no one has any longevity in this sport. And so if I'm Sean Masood, I'm thinking, well, what's best for me now? Should I be looking for franchise opportunities? Should I be looking at life beyond cricket? Like whatever, I don't know. I haven't talked to Sean. This is completely making this up off the top of my head. But you know what I mean? Like if that's what you're thinking, like, you guys told me I was the worst. Then I pull this off. And then straight away you're like, but by the way, you might get fired. Well, fuck you. I mean, that is definitely me and not Sean. I can't imagine him saying that.
Yeah, it's very uncalled for, the pressure that you're just exerting on someone. And it's before a series, which, you know, Pakistan generally suck at. They never do well in South Africa. They've won 2 test matches over there. But anyway, this is not even the end of it. There were a bunch of players who have missed out over here. Let me list them out for you, right? Imamul Haq did not get picked in any squad and is not in a part of the central contract list. Now, there is a very strong rumor that he was the leak, right? So that might be the reason, potentially. Mohammad Haris, who was just captaining the emerging team, is not part of any squad or the central contract list. Shadab Khan is part of the central contract list, but he's not part of any squad. And I reckon the reason behind that is so that he can go play some red ball cricket and get some overs in. I can somewhat understand that. Iftikhar, not part of any squad, not part of the central contract list. Sure, he was old. It's another sort of case where, you know, you've tried him and you've got to invest in the future now. I'm fine with these. Maybe not Haris. I really think that you're sending mixed signals to that kid. Yeah. And Shadab, I'm fine with going and getting healthy and playing red ball cricket.
I have an issue with him from the perspective of if his groin is the issue, what is the thought of him bowling extra overs in red ball cricket to be a better bowler? Like he's got a technical issue. Bowling more overs. unless I'm wrong and he's just holding his groin back because it's like a mental block or something. That sounded weird. Unless he's holding his groin back. Is Shadab Khan holding his groin back? But you know what I mean? Like bowling extra overs, how's that going to help him? I don't even understand how that would be the case.
I mean, I suppose maybe some of those muscles could be strengthened. I don't know. And maybe he could get more consistent with his lines and lengths, potentially. Because accuracy is important. And he's dragging back a lot of deliveries and a lot of full tosses, yeah, right?
Because he's not moving his groin through the ball. He's not rotating. If he can't rotate, I mean, my shoulder's really buggered at the moment. And if I bowled more, I think I would probably be in a position where the arm muscles around my shoulder would probably strengthen and it would be better. But if my arm is sore, I'm still going to bullshit, right? Yeah. Like, it's not actually going to change anything there. So, no, it's not for me.
They could have potentially looked at him as an option as a number four batter who has experience playing in Australia. So let's take him to Australia. But no, they have different ideas. And I mean, this is all obviously subjective. Other people might have other opinions. Here's the fun one, though. Fakhar Zaman, and I don't know if you caught this or not, but he tweeted when there were rumors that Babar is about to be dropped, right? And he said that the suggestion of dropping Babar and all of that stuff is not in line with what he believes in. And now he's not part of any squad and he doesn't have a central contract anymore. One of the few players who is an impact player and, you know, has that aggressive style of play up top and has been a fantastic servant for Pakistan. He's the hero of the Champions Trophy final. Now, when the chairman was asked what the reason is, he was like, yes, the tweet was there, but Fakhar's fitness is also an issue. Well, I mean, if he's part of your plans, then give him a contract, right? Here's what's happening.
Yeah. So just to stop you there, if fitness is an issue, then you shouldn't lose your contract for a fitness.
Yep. I mean, Abrar still has one, right?
Yeah, that's the opposite of what we're talking about. You actually should be, if fitness is the issue, you want them to be in your main setup and fixing them, right? And so if they're not, then what are we even doing there? Sorry, go off on your own and fix your fitness? Okay.
Yeah, and the Champions Trophy is right around the corner. You need Fakhar Zaman, his experience, his aggression, and someone who can completely turn a game around. And I mean, look, what's actually happening over here is that this is a big battle between a player agency called Saya Corporation, who honestly haven't done themselves any favors, and the PCB. It's a power dynamic that has been in the news for a while, and the PCB are very upset that Saya Corporation has so many of their players or PCB's players signed up. Unionize the players. Give them a players' union so you won't have these problems, but that's exactly what they don't want, right?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's not really, it's the players who have to decide on the union, isn't it? It's not something that you would normally force down from your employers. Employers usually go out of their way, Bayram, not to have unions, if we're being honest. But yeah, your general point is right. Like, if you're having a problem with the player agency, I think, and that happens, I've never seen it happen in a major international team, but it's certainly a big issue in franchise cricket sometimes and can be a big issue for associate teams. At times, you know, if someone ends up doing five guys out of the starting 12 or 13, that's a very important person, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Neil Fairbrother in England is a very powerful person because of the people he represents, right? Like he's the agent to so many important English players that you probably don't want to do anything that he disagrees with. So that can be an issue, but that's professional sport.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, you look at the CAA in America in basketball, and you look at some of the agencies that, you know, look after the NFL players or the footballers. It's like, it's the same thing. They have incredible power at times, and you have to work out how to deal with that and not, you know, the idea, it's a bit old man shouting at clouds. Oh no, the agents are taking over. And it's like, what that? Okay. You're basically upset that smartphones exist at that point,
well,
right?
Like this agency,
we're not going to go back to Nokia. Sorry.
This agency doesn't really do itself any favors because, you know, they're tweeting stuff on behalf of players that, you know, the players haven't written, right? There's a lot of that. And I don't know, man.
But again, I'm not saying you're wrong. What I'm saying is that is happening all across all professional sports right now.
Yeah.
Right? You have to deal with the reality that these agents have power. The idea that you're unhappy with their tweets, I don't know, go suck a lemon. I don't care. That's the truth is this agent has power. So what are you going to do? Moan at them? Not give any of their players contracts and then look like idiots all the time? You can't do any of that sort of stuff. So is it worth just losing games? Like,
You have to deal with the reality that you are in. And the reality of modern sports is there are agents who are very powerful, right? Mm. And get over it.
Yeah. I mean, they're clearly punishing Fakhar over here. It's quite evident. And I've heard from my little birds that Fakhar Zaman has now left that agency and has apologized to the PCB, and there might be some sort of turnaround. I wouldn't be surprised, but like, this is exactly the sort of authoritarianism and muscle flexing that makes us dislike the PCB.
It doesn't help them. If that's what's happened, if Fakhar Zaman's left that agency, it doesn't help them. It's the same. It's the same issues over and over again. So yeah, not for us.
I call the PCB the Loki of cricket, right? Loki is the master of chaos in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he's also very narcissistic. Funny how the PCB and every chairman that comes never misses a photo op. So there are a lot of parallels over there. But someone responded to my tweet and they were like, don't insult Loki like that. So
you know my running joke, which is find me someone who runs the PCB who's in worse form than Babar Azam.
Yeah.
I think I would even go, when we talk about chaos in Pakistan cricket, the cricket team is far more consistent and normal than the PCB. PCB is like, and so it's a bit like, and to take your analogy a little bit further, you know, it's a bit like having Ricky Gervais or Steve Carell as your manager, right? Like, how do you have a normal office job when, you know, you've got a failed stand-up comedian as your boss, right? Like an absolute clown as your boss.
Yeah.
That's the kind of situation that these people are in.
Yeah. And I mean, even Loki kind of turned things around. Spoiler alert, guys, but he became a good guy. And I'm waiting for PCB, to have that, change of arc or whatever. But anyway, more important news. Mohammad Rizwan is the new white ball captain of Pakistan. I feel like they weren't particularly spoiled for choice. Maybe perhaps he should have gotten this job a bit earlier. And Salman Ali Agha is the vice captain in white ball cricket. Now, I like Salman, but I'm not sure if he has his position locked down in either format, right? I mean, it's an interesting one. And I'm really surprised that they've actually gone for Rizwan, because he's someone who does what he wants and he's not a yes man. But clearly they've done some negotiating over here and they've probably accepted some of Rizwan's terms.
Oh, I'm sure that they had a thorough process where they asked him to come in and asked him what kind of game plan he was going to do and what kind of tactics he was looking for. And they decided he was the right person for the job.
He came in with a PowerPoint. Of course he did, right? Mohammad Rizwan.
I mean, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And he,
I do think he has good tactical nous based on whatever I've seen.
Oh, yeah, I'm not having a go at Mohammad Rizwan. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you just keep picking random people, eventually someone will do well. Right, and it might have nothing to do with the captaincy. It might just be that you get a couple of bowlers who bowl really well, or you know, batters go on a tear and you make a lot of runs. If you're not making decisions based on a thorough professional mindset, you're just, you know, oh, we've given him the captaincy, great. You just threw a dart at a dartboard and he was the most senior player that the dart hit. Great. Of course. Awesome. I'm so excited for you. You know, you recently had a white ball captain that never even captained a game, didn't you? Like, I don't give a shit.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Rizwan is a fighter. He's a bit of a character. And I feel like he can unify the team and has the tactical nous. But who's to say how long he lasts in the job? It's not like they've told him that, hey, Rizwan, the next 3 years are yours, right?
Yeah.
They've probably just told him that, hey, the next 2 series are yours. And that's not how you run cricket. You've got to think long-term.
And that gets back to what we were talking about before, right? Like, if he's really the right person, how much time did they spend working out if he was the right person?
Probably none.
England, when Owen Morgan became the captain, Jimmy Anderson, Ian Bell, someone else I'm missing. There's like 4 or 5 guys who came in and interviewed for the position. And I think was it Owen Morgan's job? I think it was Owen Morgan's job. But there was like a bunch of different people who came in to interview for that position. Maybe it was one of the other captaincy positions anyway. But I remember talking to people behind the scenes and I was saying, you weren't really going to give it to Ian Bell or Jimmy Anderson or whoever else it was. And they were like, no, but we also didn't want to be in a situation where we just gave it to the person who seemed like the right guy because of his age and experience. We actually wanted to see if someone had a vision, you know, for whatever this was, right?
Hmm.
And, you know, I remember talking to someone else about this once of what was a coaching position. And they were like, we're definitely going to give it to this guy. And I was like, fine, that's your decision. I said,
don't you want to get other people in to see if there is someone else out there that will surprise you and that I also might challenge you a little bit and make you think in a different way? And they went, no, we want to give it to the person we want to give it to. And I was like, well, I'm glad you got me in as a consultant for this decision you've already made. But, you know, so when these sorts of things happen, you do say to yourself, like, just maybe someone, I don't know, maybe other people will come up with different options or a way of splitting up the job differently or a way of doing the job differently or whatever that may be that is still handy to you. And also that senior player or that good player feels heard. You know, they went in, they had their opportunity and they didn't get it, and that's fine.
Yeah. It's interesting how Rizwan was talking about how he has plans for the Los Angeles Olympics. And I was like, buddy, you don't know if you'll be around till next year. How can you have those long or those elaborate plans?
But also, look, awesome that he has those plans. I don't think I've heard anyone else really talk about the Olympics.
Yeah, good PR for the Olympics.
Does he mean like as a tourist, like just turning up and
as a brand ambassador?
Yeah. Anyway, he's going to be one of the mascots of the Olympics.
I mean, he could do a better job as the mascot of all these ICC World Cups that we see because it's the same mascots over and over and over again.
What happened to Stumpy? Was it Stumpy?
Yeah, the elephant? I really like Stumpy.
Is Stumpy the only mascot that any cricket fans remember?
I suppose so.
Is it Stumpy or Stampy? I can't remember.
I think it was Stumpy. It has to be Stumpy.
It was the elephant, wasn't it? There was an elephant in the 2011 World Cup?
There's a pun in there. Of course it's Stumpy, right? And anyway, look, the new selection model we discussed is far from sustainable. Everything that they're doing at the PCP is far from sustainable. It's not even close. And look, long-term planning, vision, and then execution, they all seem to be like foreign alien concepts when it comes to the PCB. There is no structure. There is no professionalism. There is no predictability or consistency. They keep saying consistency, 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 and then they do something drastic. Now they're saying clarity, 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 and we have none. So will we ever see these things in Pakistan cricket, or is this just like a pipe dream?
Do you know what? One thing I would say is I don't think professionalism in cricket has actually been around that long. Like if you think about it, early 2000s, it was still pretty shambolic, right? And even before T20 cricket, in some countries, you know, it was very... I don't think Australia had a paid analyst until like 2011 or 2012. And they were they were light years ahead of everyone else, right? And they didn't have that simple job. Like county teams had analysts and the Australian cricket team didn't have it. So who knows what the future is going to bring from... all that sort of stuff. You're closer to it than I am. I just, from my perspective, there needs to be, rather than one person coming in and going, and it needs to be at the chairman level, rather than one person coming in and going, I'm going to fix all this stuff.
Yeah.
Every release has to not have the chairman's name on it.
Mm-hmm. Every little thing, you know, where the heater is coming from, the chairman has to sign on it. And so, this has been the trend.
Yeah. So, but what I'm saying is, so every time something happens in Pakistan cricket, it should be the Pakistan Cricket Board have decided this and we've decided it as a collective.
Yes.
And that's the first step towards it. Otherwise, all you get is the same situation over and over again, which is, I think someone put the comment in before about the combination of savior and scapegoat, right? And it's like, so even if these guys do great jobs, the minute they stuff up, they're just going to be thrown out anyway. Whereas actually, if it's a collective, that's a much harder thing to actually take down. It's never been a collective.
Yeah. Right? And honestly, I don't have any faith that it ever will be. No one will buck the trend. It's all about chairman is the ultimate power and they're going to do what they want to do. And I mean, I just don't see any progress. It's the same story or movie replayed over and over and over again. And I mean, someone just put in a comment too saying that Salman Ali Agha has never played a T20. They don't think about these things, right? They're like, we're just going to put our faith in this guy now because he seems to be a nice bloke.
It's very important that, you know, it depends, as I said before, where the dart lands is a very important way of doing it. Just a couple of things to finish up as well. I know we've got a couple of super chats as well.
Yes.
Anish says, Jared, be honest, are we done? Well, I don't think you can win this series, Anish. I think if I was going to put my money on anyone in this series, it would be on New Zealand. There's still plenty of stuff I like about the Indian cricket team. Yep. I still thought if they pick, I mean, Mohammad Shami not being fit is massive, but I thought if Mohammad Shami and Hardik went over, I thought they were an interesting shot. It's funny, I talked to my dad this morning. And he was like, oh, I looked at that squad and I was like, we could win. He's been telling everyone India might roll Australia this summer. So it tells you the Australians aren't massively confident in a way. Yeah. My dad's not usually sitting there going, the team's going to lose. But it's going to be a very hard next 10 test matches for, or 11 test matches for India. Like, it's going to be absolutely huge. Thank you for the super chat. Sumit says, we don't want to listen about the low-tiered, dysfunctional Pakistan cricket. Very important, Sumit, if that's the case, for you not to listen. We didn't force you to listen. We don't care if you listen. Like, not every topic is going to be for you. We do hundreds of podcasts about many different topics. And if you don't like it, piss off. It's fine. You don't even have to tell us. You know, we've got people who support us on Patreon who don't listen to certain podcasts and don't even look at the YouTube channel or read the articles or whatever. That's okay. They still get all of that access, right? This idea of not talking about the dysfunctional nature of Pakistan cricket, it's like we talk about the dysfunctional nature of Zimbabwe cricket on this podcast, right? We talk about the dysfunctional nature of you know, some of the women's organizations, and you know, we had the Fairbreak guy on and all these different things. That's what this channel is. It's about cricket. If you don't like cricket, Sumit, you don't have to come here. That's more than fine. We're not saying that we are making content for every single human in the world. We're just making the content that is most interesting to us. And this Pakistan stuff has been bubbling up for a while. But the problem is we haven't really talked about much off-field stuff because there's been a Women's World Cup, four different test series, I suppose. There's test series everywhere at the moment, right? You know, there's all this different cricket being played. But this Pakistan stuff is quite interesting. If for no other reason, then can you think of a single time I wouldn't want to talk about the fact that the organization of a cricket country is so bad that they just went, I don't know, what about an umpire?
You've got one more,
and
right?
Just on Ragnar as well, he says, why aren't you covering the IPL retention? Look, it's just been, me and Bayram specifically have both been doing two different test series at the same time. This idea that we get a million views for doing the IPL retention, go and have a look at some of our other views on the main channel, Ragnar. We ain't getting no million views for that. That's just absolute nonsense. In fact, have a look at all the numbers that we have when it comes to IPL cricket. Nowhere near what we get for international cricket to begin with. It's just not comparable in any way. We will do something in the IPL retention, but because of when it is, it's going to be after. And we'll have a look at that. We will be trying to cover all that sort of stuff as well. Shira says, why do you address the haters? Not about addressing the haters. If someone comes up with information, I want to explain why they're wrong. Like, people don't know everything. When you are a podcaster or a writer or YouTuber or whatever you are, a commentator, not everyone knows everything. Right. Yeah. So someone else says, why are you covering this? Well, I've been covering Pakistan cricket for 17 years. That's why I'm covering it. It's interesting to me. It has always been interesting to me. But dysfunction in cricket boards is literally the thing I'm most interested on. It is why I made a documentary about dysfunction and governing cricket. So if you were coming here and moaning about that, you're just thinking about the wrong thing altogether.
Title is in the thumbnail. Don't turn up if you don't like it, right? Like, it's not like we intended to talk about something else and now we're talking about Pakistan cricket. So look, we hadn't done an uncovered in ages, as Jared said, and this was the most obvious thing to do an uncovered on, right? That's that. Anyway, that kind of wraps up this podcast. So thank you to everyone for your super chats and your interactions in the comments. And just a quick reminder to everybody, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do on this channel, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll see you soon enough in a Crick Picks or a Footmarks or another live show. But that is all for today. Have a good one, guys, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.